This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen.
This must end. It is now time to open Texas 100%.
Well, good news, good news, good news. You heard it from Governor Greg Abbott. Texas is 100% open. We're going to talk about that and a few other stories from this week. I'm Brandon Waltons, managing editor of Texas Scorecard, joined here Michael Quinn Sullivan, who is absolutely ecstatic about the news from this week that Texas is now 100% open.
Yay!
Is that okay?
Yes. So, you celebrated yesterday. I think we maybe have the picture that we can put up. By burning your mask in Jubilee.
It was surprisingly liberating. Now, to be honest, that mask been wadded up in, I kind of move it from suit pocket to suit pocket, my blue jeans pockets. I think only been on my face like twice. I just kind of have it so I can hold it up and then I shove it back in my pocket. Right. But I'm done. It's been like my passport, Okay, I've got a face mask, leave me alone,
Right. So for some background on this, after having the state under numerous shutdowns, numerous mandates, including a statewide face mask mandate for nearly a year now, Governor Greg Abbott announced earlier this week that he was signing a new executive order that would undo most of his previous executive orders. This means for businesses, they can all go back to 100% capacity.
On Wednesday.
No businesses are closed. And the statewide mask mandate will be lifted next Wednesday. Yes. So 8 days from when he made the announcement, it'll be next Wednesday. Why do you think the announcement came now? What's different now than a few weeks ago?
I think what's different now is that Greg Abbott got this first taste of his national popularity. At the CPAC convention in Florida, the big, kind of granddaddy of conservative gatherings. Mm-hmm. They have a straw poll that's always asking kind of who's your favorite for in the next presidential contest. And Greg Abbott came in dead last. He came in, predictably Donald Trump was the top vote getter. Then it was Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida. Then it was Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota. And then it was all these people, many of whom you've probably never heard of. But Greg Abbott came in behind even John Kasich, who's no longer a Republican, came in behind Mitt Romney, who was told he wasn't allowed to attend. So Greg Abbott came in behind all these people, came in dead last. And I think that when that happened on, a Saturday or Sunday, Greg Abbott's people went, oh no, we need to do something and try to correct this perception. And so they rushed out then with this very... look, on the one hand, that's great. I am glad that that the governor is seeing the light and is removing the mandates he imposed. Mm-hmm. These were not imposed by Fauci. These weren't imposed by some mythological being from Greek mythology or something. Greg Abbott imposed them, and now he's taking them away. But I'm glad that's happening. But yet, he's doing it in 8 days, clearly time for his pollsters to go out and say, oh, is this enough? Is this sufficient? And I think that I know that sounds cynical, but I think that's why he's doing it now.
Well, just because the statewide mask mandate is lifted doesn't mean necessarily that folks are going to be able to take them off at all parts of the state. He actually did lay out a process to where if hospitalization rates reach above 15% in any given area, county judges, usually Democrats, at least especially kind of urban areas, will be able to bring back their restrictions, shut capacities down to 50%, slap whatever mandates they want. That's one thing. And at the same time, too, he's encouraging people to continue wearing them, encouraging businesses essentially to have policies to require them. And we're even seeing in public schools that... the Texas Education Agency, state agency, oversees education, is saying the mask mandate is still in place unless school boards actively go remove their own policies.
Right. Right. Yeah, it feels like there's a lot of this in this in the statement from the governor. A lot of, you know, oh, I'm going to open, but I'm not going to open. I'm trying to have it both ways. You know, the problem with playing in the middle is, you know, it's what you always heard, you know, the only thing you find in the middle of the road is the roadkill. And I think that the other thing that Greg Abbott experienced this week was that, you know, he comes out with this announcement on Tuesday. Oh, yes, Texas is open 100%. Everything is what he tweeted. But then you start reading the details, find, well, no, sort of. There are exceptions and exemptions and encouragements and other things. And so what he then saw was, so you look, I mean, it's very funny to look on his Twitter feed, look on his social media posts where, you know, you've got folks on the right saying you should have done it sooner, you're not doing enough. Folks on the left, you know, why are you doing this? You're killing people. You know, he's not making anyone happy. And I think that's the problem with trying to weave some, you know, some middle ground is in this kind of environment where we've had millions of people tossed from work, thousands of small businesses have been closed, probably for good. Folks aren't looking for middle ground. Folks aren't looking for, you know, how do you bridge the gap between the steel liberty crowd and the pro-liberty crowd? You know, no one's looking for that right now. Folks either want, you know, a heavy-handed, you know, dictator in the sense of, you know, Julius Caesar coming in to save you from the barbarians or whatever. You know, you've got that crowd,
right?
Clearly, I'm seeing that. And then you've got folks saying, no, I want to take care of myself. I'm willing to take the risk so that I can feed my family. You know, I think that's the, you know, that's really the two camps that you have.
Right. I mean, Steph watching right now from Deer Park says masks in school is ridiculous.
Science is on Steph's side.
Yeah, science is on Steph's side. Carol watching live as well says Governor Abbott should have opened Texas last year. And indeed, you know, you see examples where in Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis did essentially what Abbott is doing next week. He did back in September. So
right,
that'd
right.
be interesting to see. Going forward, of course, he did mention, I want to briefly touch on this. This is something that a lot of people have been blowing up lawmakers' phone lines about. He did mention House Bill 3. This is a piece of priority legislation in the Texas House that seeks to essentially expand and codify the exact powers that he's been using over the last year.
But let's also note, the bill is being sold as, this is legislation to restrict authority. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, this is why you gotta always pay careful attention to the substance, not just the press release, because the substance of the bill does exactly what you say. They're trying to sell it as, you know, oh, we're going to restrict, you know, strict powers. Instead, they're just codifying the powers and giving it all the veneer of respectability.
Yes, and meanwhile, the Senate seems to be taking a different approach with their recently filed bill yesterday, SJR 45, by Senator Brian Birdwell. We'll have more information on that today and in the coming days at TexasScorecard.com. You can check that out. Moving to a different topic altogether, still seeing some fallout from the sub-freezing temperatures, the power outages from a couple weeks back here in Texas. The latest shoe to drop, of course, being the CEO of ERCOT, Bill Magness, being fired.
Sort of being
sort
fired.
Sort of. Explain.
Yeah, so, you know, the one of the first shoes to drop was the chairman, the vice chairman, and several of other board members of ERCOT resigning their positions. These were all folks who were from out of state who were somehow on the board managing, or I mean, it's complicated and weird, and what don't you talk about that. Then the chairman of the Public Utilities Commission, that is the gubernatorially appointed commission that allegedly is supposed to oversee ERCOT, but as we have noted, and Bill Peacock and others have noted, the PUC hasn't ever really done much real oversight. It's kind of been more rubber stamping of ERCOT in recent years. And now, just that chairman of the PUC, one of Greg Abbott's former staffers, has resigned. And then the other evening, you had ERCOT's remaining board of directors fire, sort of, terminate Bill Magness, but yet they're keeping him on for 60 days to help reform ERCOT. I mean, literally, this is the guy who caused the problems in a lot of ways. And yet he is being allowed to, you know, now guard the hen house. I'm not sure who would go to a fox and say, hey, you ate two chickens, keep guarding the hen house, but that's kind of what we're doing.
Well, and being terminated without cause, as the actual document says. Yeah. Which leads you to think, is this there's more responsibility to be spread out, but you know how these situations go. He's at the top, and it looks like he's going to be essentially the fall guy over there. So now there's going to be a new search. I guess we'll see who's going to replace it. I'm not sure who would want the job.
That's kind of what I'm thinking is, who in the world sits out there and thinking, oh, gee, wow, there's an opening at ERCOT. I'd be happy to go over there. Right now, you are walking into a landmine. And quite honestly, my conversations with a couple legislators, you might be walking into an entity that doesn't have a reason to exist in a year or 2 years, as they start really getting into some of the reforms that some folks are looking at doing over there.
Right, and we'll see what exactly those reforms look like as legislation gets filed in the coming weeks on that priority. Some other legislation that has been filed this week. You had a couple interesting bills this week. One of them, House Bill 2866 by State Representative Kyle Biederman from Fredericksburg, would essentially protect the Alamo Cenotaph by exercising some eminent domain and letting the state take over that portion, take it away from the city of San Antonio, who folks that have been following that issue over the last, I guess it's been a few years now.
Right, yeah, several years.
The city of San Antonio wanting to move that monument. And this is, I think, important to note that, Kyle Biederman has been somebody who didn't just jump into the issue now, has actually been someone who has really, really followed this closely and who has repeatedly filed legislation, but legislation he filed last session never got a vote on the floor of the House.
Right, yeah. This whole story, this whole situation shows just how much our culture has shifted where you think when the cenotaph was erected on the essentially the 100th anniversary of the Battle of the Alamo, that cenotaph essentially serving as the grave marker, the tombstone for the Alamo defenders. And, they build this beautiful, tombstone, again, the cenotaph, and it's placed there. Mm-hmm. And everyone's going, San Antonio is proud of the Alamo, proud of the Alamo defenders, the state of Texas. So everyone's kind of, together joining and honoring these individuals who gave the last full measure of devotion to the cause of liberty in Texas. And yet, fast forward to, 2016, 2019, now, 2021, and you've got this, city council in San Antonio embarrassed by the Alamo. They would rather, you talk about how, the natives made, thatched baskets there in, 2,000 years ago, than talk about what happened in 1836. And so it's a completely confuddled world, and thank goodness for guys like Kyle Biederman, for Maggie Wright, one of the great activists out there, who have not stopped in trying to figure it out. My gut tells me if Maggie Wright and Kyle Biederman and some of these others had not been out just loudly and persistently, that cenotaph would have been gone years ago. So thank goodness that they've been out there doing it, and now we've got some legislation that, who knows, maybe this time it is a priority of the Republican Party of Texas for monuments to be protected, that we don't erase our history. And so we'll see what kind of legs this has with Dade Phelan as the Speaker of the House.
Sure. Another interesting piece of legislation filed yesterday. State Representative Brian Slayton has filed House Bill 2862. What this bill would do would essentially finish the border wall, allow Texas to finish the border wall, and make the feds pay for it. And I think my favorite part of this bill is it would be named the Donald J. Trump border wall, which is a fitting tribute, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is almost as fitting as one of Mr. Slayton's other bills, renaming part of Highway, our Interstate 35, as the Steve Adler public restroom because of all the homeless encampments under it that the city of Austin has allowed. You really have to hand it to Brian Slayton. I'm not so certain that anyone really thinks the state of Texas is going to step up and pay for building the border wall. On the other hand, He is using his position in a way that too many legislators don't, which is to highlight important issues, to highlight the responsibilities of the state, and to highlight some of the absurdities that you see in that we are seeing in government. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of his colleagues and a lot of political advisors would tell Brian, "Oh, you just need to be quiet. You need to go away." But thank goodness he is taking seriously his oath of office as a member of the Texas House to do what he can to raise awareness and raise alarms, and in some ways, even shine a positive light on things. I think we need more legislators who want to do that rather than these guys who just want to, be wined and dined by lobbyists and be at ribbon cuttings back home.
Sure, absolutely. So they're not going to be looking at any of those bills anytime soon, however, because the Texas House and the Senate both adjourned on Wednesday, this last Wednesday, a couple days ago, and actually adjourned for 6 days until Tuesday. So Tuesday, March 9th, is when the legislature comes back. To be fair, they're holding committee hearings, some committee hearings, a lot of organizational hearings. I don't think any bills are really being considered.
Those end of session parties won't plan themselves,
Right. So they are doing that. At the same time, we've highlighted, and Jeremy Kitchener, Capitol correspondent, has really highlighted that, when you look at this session compared to other sessions, the clock is really ticking, especially when you look at the Republican priorities or the priorities of the governor. Any of those priorities right now, they're definitely up against the clock.
87 days left in the legislative session.
Yes, and you actually had, when they tried to make the motion to adjourn, you had State Representative Tony Tinderholt going out there and actually asking Will Metcalf, who is the chair of House Administration, who is the person who usually does the motions to adjourn, to leave. He asked him why they were deciding to leave 6 days for 6 days. We've got the clip here. Check it out.
Will the gentleman yield?
Yield for question?
Yes. Okay. I have concerns because there's a lot going on. We've heard both the governor and the lieutenant governor, as well as the speaker, talk about the fact that we're running out of time potentially for some of the stuff. Why would we be leaving for 5 days? And the reason that I ask that is because my constituency would like for us to be here doing work on behalf of the people. So I just have concerns. What would we be leaving for 5 days for at such a critical time?
Is this work? Make sure this works. So, Mr. Tinderholt, we will be working in committees. I was on state affairs on Thursday and Friday. We met for over 25 hours plus, and so we are doing the people's work.
You think if that we all stayed for the additional 5 days that we could get additional work done, or do you think that the committees are going to be able to hear the bills and do the things that we need to be here for?
Committees are in the process of working.
My concern is that, I'm almost done, I promise you. My concern is that this is the least amount we've done in this is my fourth session, this is the least amount we've done. And we have some huge issues to tackle. I'm gonna be voting no on this like I did last week. And I wanted to come up here and make sure that you knew I'm gonna be voting no, and I don't wanna leave for 5 days because my constituency wants me here doing the people's work. So thank you, sir.
Members, I move.
And by the way, for folks watching that, there was a little bit of an audio problem actually in the Texas House there. That's what happens when everybody's wearing masks. They crank up the volume, but hopefully you were able to hear what State Representative Tinderholt was saying. And look, that motion passed, but there were actually 27 people who voted against it, 27 out of 150.
And usually this is something that passes, in my 25 plus years of covering the legislature, watching the legislature, you almost never see anyone object, and if they do, it's a joke.
Yeah.
To adjourning, to taking a long weekend, whatever. But a lot of these guys are seeing, their priorities start to die before ever getting out of the starting gate, and some of them are getting worried about it. They're worried about what are they going to go home with. You've got redistricting, meaning some of these guys are going to have mostly new districts, and what are they going to have to introduce themselves with, all that kind of stuff. It's getting, some of these folks are starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. Might be a train coming at them, and they're ready to get some work done.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to be following that. It was 10 people that objected to adjourning just a week ago. Now it's grown to 27, and we'll see if that number keeps growing. It'll be really, really interesting to see. Bruce Bockhorn watching, and we got some comments here on the Facebook feed if you're watching live. Bruce says HB3 is a disaster. Talking, of course, about that I don't even know how you describe it. A bill that expands governor's mandates, gives them the force of law, says that's a disaster. Dana watching says HB3 is a disgrace to freedom. Lynette watching says many of our legislators need a permanent vacation.
Yeah, Lynette has a point. I mean, there is that point to which, in some ways, you really don't want legislators hanging around that much. Please don't govern us. We can govern ourselves. On the other hand, we have some real problems, some real things that we kind of expect to be done in many ways so that we can have our freedom restored. And all of us think as conservatives are caught in this horrible place of we don't want the meeting, but we kind of need the meeting.
Right. Some housekeeping items for folks who are following along, who want to be engaged. We've got a directory up at texasscorecard.com. Right there at tools, if you go to texasscorecard.com, there's tools. We've got the Texas directory right there. Makes it very, very easy for you to locate your lawmakers and be able to contact them, be it on their phone, be it your social media, however you choose to get in touch with them. We've got that up at texasscorecard.com. Also up there, we've got our priorities tracker. Just updated it a couple days ago, and with the rate now bills are being filed, probably needs to be updated again. But you can track exactly where the Republican and Democrat priorities for the session are and how they're faring. And so we've got that up at texasscorecard.com. And last thing, as we close out here, I want to encourage everybody. We've got a new program coming up starting on Monday called This Week in Texas, where Jeremy Kitchen, our Capitol correspondent, will highlight exactly what the schedule looks like going forward, the schedule such as it is, but maybe stuff is starting to pick up right now. And so we're going to be doing that every Monday as the session goes forward here. But for now, thank you for joining us, and check out this promo. Hope you check it out on Monday. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.